We are back on the Flexing.com T-Talk Podcast. Stefan Tiedorf here with my co-host, Scott McCloud, episode 101. Here we are.
Hard to believe.
We're not going to go down that. Last week was fun. That was really
fun.
Have
you recovered? I mean, it was a deep show.
Yeah, it was long. Getting a lot of positive reviews on my dad's
appearance.
most of the positive reviews are from him.
Okay.
He's now pitched, Story Time with Rob, which we've rebranded to Rob's Ramblings, I think, where we just have him come on maybe 5 minutes every other episode and he can just ramble about whatever. We'll see how many episodes that gets. We get through with that before that gets old. But yeah, it was a good time. And obviously we have Brad back this week as, we gave him four minutes last week.
So yeah,
we'll bring Brad Lawrence on, I mean, if we're gonna pester him to play Hamilton anytime we're in the area, I feel like we should give him at least 8 minutes this episode.
Oh yeah, at least eight. And he's a great guy, and we felt bad obviously about that. But it was a juggle. We had a dozen guests in there, and trying to get them all in was something else. And I've talked to a few people that have worked their way through the whole episode, but most people are still digesting it. Haven't seen any entries yet for
the giveaway.
Yeah. So I mean, that probably tells us how many people either got to the end, or maybe they got to the end and fell asleep by then or something, and they kind of missed it or whatever. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Some great feedback from the guests. I guess they enjoyed it as well. But I'm not sure a lot of 3-hour podcasts are in our future.
How's that? Well, I don't know. But I think I like the idea of bringing on multiple guests and doing it more of a radio show in the future. And we're going to try to mix things up. We're going to actually start this week a little bit different. We thought about it. And for a while, we've been talking about different tournaments and stuff that, in a realistic sense, we might see 10% of them just based on, lifestyle. And, we're not going to watch all the golf. We love watching golf, but we're not going to watch all of it. So we're going to just try to break down a little different. Each week we're going to start with an old segment that we've expanded called Birdie or Bogey. Now it's going to be, we're going to give a birdie of the week. It's kind of a week that was. Give a birdie, a par, a bogey, and an honorable mention where you're throwing a score on it. Pretty simple. But yeah, we'll call it the week that was. Give out some scores, things we liked, things we didn't like, stories that have happened. Try to keep it a little bit quicker than deep diving into, the snap hook hit by Jordan Spieth on the first hole of the second round of whatever. It doesn't matter.
But too easy to go down a wormhole. So we're better to keep it a little bit more on point.
Exactly. So let's start out with our birdies for the week, Scotty, in golf. What's your birdie this week?
My birdie this week is the return of Annika Sörenstam. Obviously we've talked a little bit about her lately, probably not for the reason that she'd want to, but, here's a Hall of Fame golfer going to be coming back after 13 years to play an LPGA event officially. She played as an amateur, as a celebrity at the Diamond Resorts Championship in January last month. But this is an official appearance on the tour. She, left the tour in 2008 when she was about to start a family, and it just so happens that the Gainsbridge LPGA is going to be at her home club, Lake Nona. And on top of that as well, she's interested in playing the U.S. Senior Women's Open later this year. So she figures, she's got to get some reps in. So the cool thing about this for me is just the fact that, I'm not sure what her game is like. It looked pretty good at the Diamond Resorts. All reports from a lot of players are that, her game is pretty sharp.
Yeah, I was watching a couple shots when she was out there and, Her wedges are always going to just hit it to a foot anyway. Just so dialed in and did not look out of place by any means.
No, and she says she does, she's lost a little bit as far as speed is concerned. But, what's cool here is that another generation of golfers will get to see her play, which is really kind of neat. There are now, 13 years, there's a lot of golfers that just know her as a name and that's about it. So maybe a chance that people will hear her story more on the broadcast, maybe look it up a little bit more, have an appreciation for what a talent she was.
I like it. Cool. Good birdie. Yeah, I mean, nice to see Annika out there, sell some tickets, which I guess, we're doing nowadays if we go to the Waste Management Open. I'm actually giving Brooks Koepka and the entire Waste Management Open a birdie this week. I thought it was great. It was nice to have fans back. It seems they were doing it right. They were packed. It felt more than, it felt normal to me. I mean, it wasn't.
I think they had the mics in the right places, yeah, obviously. or the wrong places in some situations.
Yeah, but it was cool, I think. Shout out to Brooks. This guy was getting just, you know, disrespected going into the week. 50-1 odds on this guy to win. And I saw that, and I threw money down. I was like, 50-1 on Brooks Koepka ever, and I'm taking it. I took him for that, and top 10, made a little bit of cash on that, which was nice to have going into Super Bowl Sunday, which was also awesome. Just an awesome Sunday. I thought the tournament was great. I don't know if you watched much, but right from when the leaders teed off, multiple lead changes, and Brooks just kind of sneak, very Tiger-like, just sneaking up from the bottom. That chip in on 17 was awesome. And just like, you can tell, I feel like he knew he was disrespected going in the week. And when Brooks is angry, this is what happens. He comes out and plays. And then I think it was cool they had the throwback to him winning it back in, what was it, 2013 when he won or something like that?
15, I believe.
He looks so young. He's got the shaggy hair out, just different style. I thought it was a great tournament. I thought it was super entertaining. Well done. And I think it shows how you can have golf fans at a tournament and do it right.
Yeah, you know what? Great tournament to the end, just because, as you said, a lot of players were in the mix. He got in there, made that chip in. And you're right. I don't know. He thinks he needs that little extra bit of motivation both ways. Not only maybe he's mad, but also with the fans as well. And he mentioned that, you know, afterwards in his press conference and talked about how he likes that energy and it gives him a lot. You know, that's just how some players are wired. So 8th PGA Tour win for him. He now has 4 regular wins and 4 majors. Finally matches that up. And I think, you know, golf is better for the fact that Brooks Koepka is back in the mix.
I agree. I thought it was a great tournament right from start to finish. We're going to talk a little bit more. Probably going to pop up in a couple different segments here as we go through our birdies, pars, and bogeys. But what's your par for the week, Scotty?
Yeah, my par for the week. I mean, I look at a par as being something that's almost a fence sitter. I mean, it's, you know, you think about it one way, you think about it another way, but you haven't really decided, you know, where you're sitting with it. But I think a lot of people are talking this week about the Pebble Beach Pro-Am and the lack of top players in the field. Obviously, Dustin Johnson had to pull out, or didn't have to pull out, but chose to pull out of it. Patrick Cantlay is the highest ranked player in the field at 11th in the world. So a lot of people obviously are going, hey, you know what? The strength of field here is less than what it was at the Sanderson Farms Championship. I think people have to realize there's a lot of factors that are involved in there, but the biggest one being be careful what you wish for. I mean, we've talked about it for a lot of years. The fact that, you know, a lot of people want to see more golf. They want to see top players from the US go around the world and whatever. Well, you know what? Here's the other side of the coin. If that happens, you basically have a dilution of events. There's only so many events that these players can play in. On the other side of it as well is, as the money has gone up in the game, players are going to start to reduce their schedules more and more. So fans are going to have to realize that you're not always going to have the names, the big celebrities that are there being, you know, your top 10 players in the world. So be careful on that. And, you know, don't sit there and whine about it. Enjoy the fact that, you know, Cantley's there. Spieth is there. Obviously, he had a great week last week. There's a number of things that can happen out of this tournament. So, yes, you may not have the star power, but on the other side of it, you know what? That's what we get.
Well, it's funny. That was actually my honorable mention this week. Is I gave it a double. Oh, yeah. I gave it a double bogey. The field at the AT&T, and not for the fact of, you know, what you're saying. Everything you're saying is right 100%. It's just the fact of, like, this is such a great golf course that every year that players avoid, basically because of the circus around it. Mm. The fact, like, we can go to Pebble Beach and have a great field. And we talked, you know, I had a theory that it was going to be the strongest field ever. Whoops, what a swing and a miss I had on that one. Just an absolute whiff. And I guess I'm just bummed out. I think it's going to be good. I actually think it's going to be a huge week. I think this can be one of those weeks where we talk about where some guy's going to have a big break. You know, and Nick Taylor, like last year, he had a big break and, you know, now he's got his card locked up for a few years and just getting absolutely disrespected as well, and betting 67-1 for the guy that won last year. And he has to deal with no circus around. Like, what's going on? So I threw money on that. Like, how do you not?
He was not even listed in the power rankings for the PGA Tour. They're listed their top 15. Unbelievable.
Yeah, embarrassing. I think it sucks. I don't know what I expected out of it, but it's still going to be good. This is the the time I will be tuning in. I love watching Pebble Beach. And if I don't have to watch some CEO hack it up or Larry the Cable Guy, you know, doing something silly in his jean shorts or whatever he's wearing.
You don't want to see Bill Murray falling in a bunker.
Don't want to see Bill, my classic Bill Murray doing Snow Angels in the bunker. You know, I don't need to see any of that. I just get to see a great golf course, one that is one of my favorites. So looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a big week. I think that you're going to see a lot of guys, you know, make a charge that have been struggling that, you know, we're getting close. It's scary to say. It is February. There's people that...
Oh, they're thinking about their cards.
Yeah, they got relaxed last year, right? Yeah, yeah. They got relaxed, and they're like, oh, I got to get in that 125 quick.
Yeah. I saw a number of articles on this, and really, you know, there's a lot of things that play into the factor of the field this week. You know, one being obviously the players that were in Saudi and are not coming over to play that. We've got a situation here that, you know, some of the players come here because they like to interact with the CEOs and the sponsors, and, you know, they put up with... Right. They put up the 5.5 hour, 6 hour rounds for the sake of, you know, obviously, you know, dealing with their sponsors. The other side, too, California is very strict right now as far as their lockdown. So no spectators there at all. So that means even things like enjoying Carmel with your spouse, if they were coming to the tournament. Yeah. You know what? You're outdoor dining in 50 degree weather. So that's probably not what you're going to do. So there's a lot of things that play into the factors here of who's there and who's not. The other side, too, is that, you know what? We've got a stacked schedule for the PGA Tour coming up with World Golf Championships. We got a Masters less than 2 months away. We got a Players that's less than a month away. So there's a lot of factors that play into that. And these guys cannot play every single week. So you know what? Pebble Beach, sorry, you're out.
Caught myself last night watching golf's greatest rounds on the golf
channel. Players Championship.
The Players Championship.
I caught a couple minutes of that too. Yeah.
You know what? I'll give this a couple minutes. Yeah. Just throw in the background. I think I was, you know, doing some work and just it was enjoyable. I forgot that Webb Simpson had that. Like they who I don't even remember who came in second. They basically came in third. They weren't even close. So
yeah, I mean obviously Tiger was on the broadcast. Kim was mixed into that one. There were, I caught it for like 4 minutes and then flipped back over and caught it again just to see a couple of shots. And but
it was great. Was sped funny. Up too. No, like
exactly. Awesome. Compressed.
You talked about your par. I gave you my honorable mention. I'm going to give you my par now.
Sure.
This is news that came out this week that rangefinders are now going to be allowed at PGA of America events. So we're talking about the PGA Championship, the Women's PGA Championship,
Senior PGA.
PGA, the PGA Professionals Championship, which I believe you are eligible for those in Canada and probably down the States if you wanted to get down there, correct?
I mean, I'm old enough for the senior stuff.
Oh, right. The seniors one. Hey, maybe we got to get working. Hey, this is the year. Last year we said we were going to try a Monday qualifier at one point. If it's not this year because of COVID, next year for sure. But we got to get out there. Me on the bag, you out there trying to grind over putts. I think it's going to be great. They announced they had their rangefinders allowed. I'm giving it a par. Yep. I don't think it's anything special. I think at this point it should have happened a long time ago. The caddies are so good anyway. Yeah. They're giving the perfect number.
Does it really? I mean, in your mind, does it? You know, and this is a perfect thing leading into a par. And what I talked about as far as you know, sitting on the fence, is it really going to make that much of a difference? I know areas of the game where it might, but I think people are thinking it's going to have an overall big impact one way or the other, where I think it more falls in the middle.
Zero impact, really, if I really think about it. Probably zero. I think it just ensures those weird ones where guys are going to make less mistakes. Caddies make mistakes. Players make mistakes.
Oh,
you pace off the wrong, you know, the wrong sprinkler head or whatever it is. They're
look
also,
at the wrong tee box. I've done that.
Exactly. All that type of stuff. Like, it's not going to change much. They're so good out there. I think what it does help is the shots that are way offline where you're in another fairway. There is a little bit of almost of a guess to the exact yardage in those situations. I mean, unless you're an absolute amazing caddy, unlike myself, I guess. But I think it just helps for those little things. It's not like people thinking it's going to slow it down. It's not slowing it down, but it's not speeding it up. I think it just makes things easier, makes people's jobs easier. We use them in practice
use
rounds.
Use that term lightly.
anyway, like they don't pace them off in practice rounds. They're looking at their notes. They're double checking it. So just may as well have it. The best tweet I saw about this was Patrick Reed's going to be the first one to get caught.
Everybody had that tweet. I think one person saw it and everybody copied it. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I thought it was perfect tweet. That tweet gets a birdie for me. But yeah, that's my par. What are your thoughts? Anything? Like, it's not going to change anything, really.
No, I think, you know, where it makes a difference, you know, obviously, if you're a tour player, you want to know your landing yardage and stuff as well, which are not necessarily things you're going to be able to zap with a laser rage finder. But, you know, I think for some short shots and things like that, you can quickly just kind of, you know, look at the flag. If you don't need that carry yardage, you can visually see where it's going to land and stuff like that. But, you know, and as far as people arguing, whether, you know, oh, well, they're going to argue whether the yardage book yardage is right versus the laser, whatever. It's not going to add that much time. We've said it before on the show. Slow players are slow players. It doesn't matter what else is involved. Generally, it's because they're just indecisive and they just have bad habits. It's not going to come down to the laser rangefinder.
Also, I think people don't like, how do you think they got the number in the yardage book?
Exactly.
like there, sometimes in the yardage book, you go up to the yardage at the, you know, in the fairway, and it says, say, 168. The yardage book might actually say actual.
Yeah.
170. And then to the front is whatever. So, like, it's so, like.
Well, it could make the life easier, too, for, like you said, for, you know, for some of the caddies and stuff that way. And I mean, it's not the old days of, you know, with the yardage wheel and you're out there measuring and stuff like that. Yeah. So, you know, no big difference. I think it's just easier to make it happen and away we go.
Exactly. Cool. What's your bogey for the week?
My bogey of the week, I was watching, I was thumbing through Twitter, you know, the usual scroll or whatever, and Golf TV had a tweet with a short clip of a film from the 1929 U.S. Amateur at Pebble Beach. And, you know, it was a clip, you know, centering on Bobby Jones, although he lost in the, I believe he lost in the first round of the matches. No, I was not there. I beat you to it, I'm sure. But it showed the golf course, especially around the seventh hole, which is this famous short par three, with all the sand around the greens and how unmanicured it was. And it wasn't so much of the cookie cutter effect. This is how it was originally designed and created. So, you know, the bogey is the fact that this golf course has become over-manicured to meet this certain ideal of a golf course when that's not how it was. And you can see that, you know, the number of people that responded to the film, the clip that was posted, was, and especially, you know, there were tour players, Aaron Oberholzer was in there, all sorts of players are like, wow, that's how it should look. So the bogey really goes to Pebble Beach for over manicuring and making those changes to the property over the years and not giving it that natural look. And hey, you know what? $575 US around, you know, they're worth a lot of money. The whole company is, they've got the funds and the resources to return it to that look if they want to.
Yeah.
That's within their power to do it. They just haven't done it. So my bogey is the fact that it's not the way it used to be.
And I do wonder if that's why they thought, hey, if we can make it look like this perfect golf course, we can charge more. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where it, but I think that was the case back then. People wanted that in the 90s or whenever the big change came to everything has to be perfect.
Yeah, I mean, there's a there's that progression of the 50s and 60s and 70s of what golf architecture and design was. And definitely, you know, you saw that as far as the shapes of bunkers and everything became more manicured and more perfect. So, you know, you're right. You're saying that right now that, you know, we are sort of returning to our roots a little bit more.
Yeah, I would be all for it. I've gone back and forth on Pebble Beach and on the record said I would never pay that price. And recently on the record said, absolutely, I will. I think the history is just so cool. And
yeah,
I think if you're ever out there, I think it's worth it. It's a once in a lifetime thing if you can get out there. So if it went back to that kind of old school style where everything wasn't perfect and the bunkers weren't perfect, I think it'd be cool, but I don't think they'll actually do it. I think now they're known for what they're known for, and
yeah,
it's
hard to say because you look at their other courses on their property, and they have that more, you know, the more similar look. If you look over at Spyglass, for an example, and you know, the course that's not in the rotation this week is the Monterey Peninsula Club, and I think a lot of people love that rustic nature of it there. So I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if at some point, you know, they start to see the appeal of other places like you know, Bandon Dunes and things like this that are going with more of that rough hewn look, and that they may start to reintroduce that a little bit more here.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing it in its glory now this week.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good week of golf, and golf's kind of the only thing, the only show right now on Sundays. They finally, you know, Super Bowl's done, so
yeah.
No football for a while, so I wonder if we're going to see a return in TV ratings and stuff. So something to keep an eye on over the next couple of weeks if you care about TV ratings, which nobody really does. My bogey for the week is Jordan Spieth is back tweets. If you watched, and Jordan Spieth has never been a guy that's going to hit fairways and greens.
Did he leave?
Yeah, exactly. Well, A, that's the thing. Like, he top 10'd. He's top 10 many times over the last couple of years. He just hasn't won.
He just hasn't shot 61 doing it.
And 61 was awesome. But to say, like, he's back, baby, like, he was all over that golf course, which is how Jordan Spieth plays golf. Like, but I think people just were looking at the score, him making big putts. If I saw some videos out there where, like, you can tell this guy's got some things going on in his head where, you know, you probably saw the same video with the towel and all that type of stuff. But, like, let's settle down. I think a top 10, you know, you can't say somebody's back until they win, even if you feel he's gone. Like, I don't think he's ever going back to what he was. That stretch of golf he had was historic. He's a great player. I just don't, I think we can all settle down. It was early. There was a big field at the top to say, like, he had it locked in the bag. The betting odds went crazy that he was, like, I don't know, it was like he was tied going into Sunday. And I believe he was 2-1 odds versus Xander Schauffele, who's up to like 5-1. And it's what are we doing here? And I do recognize how gambling works is a little bit different, that the bookers take, you know, they got to adjust the line based on who's putting money where. Where, you know, I stayed steady on Brooks from behind because he's been there all along. Jordan's good. He's whatever. He's great. He's one of the top golfers of all time, if you really think about it from his major standpoint. But I think the back tweets were aggressive to say on Saturday when the tournament had a long way to go.
Yeah, they were. And I can gather people's enthusiasm. Again, you know, we said it on the show, I don't know, it was probably 2 years ago, you know, that he was this great hope for America. You know what I mean? And then they all got behind him and things like this. And, you know, he epitomized certain things that they wanted to see as far as a player was concerned. But, I think his ability is still there. You know, his ability to win majors at the clip he did. Yeah, you're in a different zone when he did that. Asking him to return to that or expecting him to stay in that, that's pretty hard to do. I mean, Rory obviously hasn't done that as well. I mean, it's not easy. So I think people then, you know, should probably have a greater respect to see what a guy like Dustin Johnson has done.
Oh, in Dustin, the last little while. We even talked about him winning in Saudi Arabia. Like,
yeah.
Like, so, had he ever even seen that golf course? I have no idea. He probably has. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, the guy just wins and wins and wins. And I feel like we're just kind of brushing by it because of his personality a little bit. But, like, this guy shows up now to a golf course and it's getting to the point, it's almost Tiger-esque.
That's a valid point. I mean, people get caught up in the emotion of Spieth, and I think that's what they latch onto, and that affects what they're thinking and feeling and watching, and the same as they did when Tiger, and I'm not comparing Spieth and Tiger as far as ability, but it's that energy that a player has. And, you know, it's like Rory when he's in full flight, and, you know, even, you know, we'll talk about a player, Patrick Reed, who you mentioned or whatever, but, you know, that Ryder Cup match that, you know, he all of a sudden has with, it's that energy that people get caught up in, right? So, you know, that's part of where people get fooled a little bit into thinking that, you know, that current level of energy is what defines a person's career. And that's no different than, you know, watching the NBA and watching a player who does amazing things for 1 year, and people are like, oh, he's the next best thing. And then
Jeremy Lin back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah. That's the perfect example where all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, you know, this guy's going to be around for the next 20 years. It doesn't work that way.
And Jordan will be around. I mean, he's got, he's, I don't think he has lifetime membership with his, but he's going to be around. He's not going to lose his card. Like, is that good? I think one thing to be weary of is I think he is falling a little bit behind in some ball speed stuff and things that others are getting up there, right? Like there was a couple shots, you know, hitting at 169 ball speed, 170 ball speed, where, you know, 180 seems to be the number that people are all hovering around or trying to get to. Bryson at, what was he trying to get to, 200 or?
Yeah. And I think those are fractional gains that could make a difference of one stroke or two stroke, which is really important, obviously, now in the PGA Tour. Because, you know, if we look at it that way, I mean, Steve Stricker's 54 years old and, you know, tied for fourth.
And certainly wedging everything in.
Yeah. So there's lots of ways.
Steve putt on Sunday, he wins.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
Like, that was so – he played the best Steve Stricker tee to green that Steve Stricker probably ever played. Like that was prime Steve Stricker tee to green. And that was 55-year-old Steve Stricker on the greens. Which is like, that's the one where those guys like him, where it's like, I can't lose that. That's what keeps me competitive. And it's almost the opposite for him with usually like on Sunday, those birdie putts where it's like, Steve, like I was rooting for Steve, even though I had money on Brooks. Cause that's the story. Right.
Yeah,
that's
that was the exact opposite. Spieth was making it from everywhere.
So, and that's, you know, he was balancing that out from his actual ball striking.
But because they weren't doing everything, it equates to a top placing, but it doesn't equate to a win. And the margins are so slim now at that top level that you need everything firing to be able to get past the field. Maybe not this week, but
I think, that's fair. I think what was key as we talked about, that's what just made it an exciting Sunday. That's why it was a birdie for me. It was just an awesome tournament. I think I've ties to the tournament, being gone to it and just loving the area and playing the golf courses around there. But I think it's becoming one of those must see tournaments. And it's the best Sunday. You get up, they finally figured out the timing too. I don't know if you watched the Super Bowl or not, but they finally got it right where it was like, we're going to do threesomes so we can get through it. So it's done at 5:30 Eastern time.
Perfect.
So there's an hour of pregame going into the Super Bowl that starts at 6:30. It was so good where I've had the Super Bowl and I've had to flip back and forth between the two, and that should never happen. They finally got it right. So that's my birdie. I gave my honorable mention already with being the double bogey of the field at the AT&T. What's your honorable mention this week?
Yeah, my honorable mention is a par, and it's, you know, it's kind of the golf industry in general. I mean, I spend a lot of my weeks talking to a lot of people in the industry, not only in Canada, US, around the world, about a number of different things. And you know, the topic of the surge in golf last year and the rounds being up, although, you know, there's still some discussion. We don't really have the full data of, you know, what's the separation between actual new golfers and just more rounds by players that were already established. But my par basically there is just a little bit of a warning to golf courses and the fact that, you know what, they need to continue to scale up in everything that they do. Inevitably, you know, as the COVID pandemic, you know, subsides, we're going to get in a situation here that a lot of people are going to return to normalcy and a lot of different other activities. So, you know, this is an opportunity for golf courses to stand out. Unfortunately, I've talked to a number of golf courses that, you know, are kind of going, oh, well, we were busy last year, we're going to be busy this year. And then you say, what are you going to be doing different this year? And they're like, well, we're not going to do really anything because, you know, it was busy, so we're going to be busy again. But it's just warning them that, you know, this is their opportunity to push ahead, especially if they have more resources or more revenue or different things that are available. This is their time to innovate and separate themselves in the field. And I know some other courses that have, and I've got some stories coming up in the next little while of courses that are really doing big things to make themselves stand out. And I think that's the really big thing. People are just not going to fall into the you know, the door by default. You got to keep doing things to make them happen, just like any business segment at all. You've got to keep going because, you know what, there's another competitor coming, there's another person that's ready to do something different, there's a changing market that are looking for different things. So just a par right there, just kind of, you know what, keep at it, and you know, you'll survive.
I like that. I would be curious to hear what our guest has to say about this, because he's in a little bit of a different world, being in the private, you know, sphere at Hamilton, and a high end private. But, you know, what are they doing, right? Like, how are they changing it for their members, and what is he seeing other courses doing that? And that's something we talk about at length on here. And I don't know if anybody really cares at this point what our thoughts are on it, but hey, they keep listening. So, I'd love to hear what his thoughts are. And I agree with you. You gotta keep getting better. You can't expect the same. I've been seeing a bunch of stuff like that where, you know, golf courses are reducing membership because they think the public play is going to come in higher this year. It's like, I hate to break to you. Like, once that, like, you got to find a way to keep these people here. Cause once that vaccine rolls out and people are able to get back, like, people might just want to go to a restaurant more and go, like, to Canada's Wonderland and things like that. Like, those things they weren't able to do. Right. You had golf last year. Like, so you have to do something. You have to do something different. Go to the beach. Right. Like,
and they might do it in droves.
Open last year. Yeah. I don't.
And they might do it in more magnified way than they have done previously. So that could have a negative impact as far as the industry. So, you know, you have to think about all those things.
Huge year for the golf industry. I think the states are going to have a great year. I think the states have gone full circle here on the whole pandemic. They went from like, what is this country doing to now like, this the way the vaccines come in. I was talking to a guy in the music industry that, you know, pretty big Canadian band, saying like our management's talking about getting tours for late next year in the States because I think we're going to be able to, and crowds are going to be safe, and they're going to have and anywhere in Canada, it's like, I don't even feel safe to go to a restaurant yet. Like, it's crazy. So I think America's in for a really good year from a golf industry standpoint and everything. And I really hope Canada can catch up here. Selfishly, I just want to be able to go to the Canadian Open. Like, that's such a small thing. Like, I just want that to come back with fans. And even that looks less and less by the day, as you kind of heard, you know, from Lawrence last week. He's even unsure of what's going to go on there. But they're working on it. We'll see. But let's chat with Brad. Why don't we call him, see what he's up to? Set the timer. We're going to give him 8 minutes, right? Double is his usual time. But no, we're looking forward to chatting with Brad from Hamilton Golf and Country Club.
All right, we want to welcome to the podcast Brad Lawrence, a PGA of Canada professional, good friend for a long time, the 2020 Ontario PGA Junior Leader of the Year and a nominee for the PGA of Canada Junior Leader of the Year. Welcome back to the podcast, Brad, after a very short appearance last week.
I was going to say, you forgot one major award, shortest stint on Tee Talk in an interview.
Yeah, I appreciate the 30 seconds I got last week, guys. And, you know, I got kicked off of the CEO of Golf Canada, so I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, it wasn't totally intentional, and we appreciated you coming on to the, you know, our anniversary show, or centennial show, I guess, for the 100th episode. But, you know, let's get into a little bit of your background. Obviously, in the 3 minutes, we didn't really get into that too much. But for those that are not familiar with you, obviously, you're very busy on social media and other avenues. Give us the elevator pitch on who's Brad Lawrence.
The 30-second elevator pitch is I am currently the associate pro at Hamilton Golf and Country Club. I've worked at Mississauga Golf Club, Weston Golf Club, the Golf Lab, and then most recently Brampton Golf Club. And I've done everything there is in this golf business you could name, pretty much, including cutting grass last spring.
How did you get first involved with golf?
I don't know if your listeners are all, it depends where they're from. There used to be a place called Family Golf in Oakville, right by the Ford plant. That's my uncle, or my dad's cousin, owned it.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, you're going to go take summer camp there. You're going to learn how to play golf. And then I wanted to be a paramedic. I was in high school when I dissected a pig and got 0 out of 100.
What's like, maybe hold on. No, time.
Wind it back.
How?
We have to hear more.
Like, did you light it on fire? Like, I feel like anybody should be able to get at least one mark.
Well, I did not do very well. And I was with my partner. I'm like, man, you work at a deli department. You should be able to handle this no problem. And I got, like, we got the lowest mark in the class by far. So I decided to take up golf, and here I am.
I mean, you can't get negative, so of course it's going to be the lowest mark.
Let's go back. So you got your buddy from the deli department to bring that slicer, and then you had shaved pork chops.
Well, we weren't allowed to eat it. I tried, but he's like, no, you cannot eat this.
All right.
Things I didn't expect to get into in the podcast. So, you wanted to get into the golf industry, but did you think, being a golf professional itself would be the task?
Yeah, I thought of being a sales rep once upon a time, and then it's like there's no jobs for that you could find. So it's like, what do? You work at a golf course, and then in my case, I got fortunate that I worked at Mississauga for GAR, and it was fantastic. And one year they're like, hey, we need someone to run a junior program, and being a new guy in the totem pole, my hand got put up for me, and here I am.
We should say that's the legendary Gar Hamilton, the longtime pro at Mississauga Golf and Country Club, who many people are probably familiar with, not only for his stint as a club professional, but also for his playing talents as well.
He might be the best player. I got to play with him a few times, and he's the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever?
Yeah,
like, what do you mean? Like, from a teaching, like, or you just mean in general?
Like, he could he could play. Like, he could
He played on the tour. He played on the tour, so.
He would have been late 50s, early 60s when I worked for him. Still hit it 270 and had a short game like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. So, I followed him 1 year. He won the Canadian Seniors at Carlton Golf and Yacht Club, and I covered it that year. And yeah, it was a show to watch, that's for sure. He definitely had PGA Tour level skills.
What's your game at nowadays, Brad?
I'm a solid. Yeah, I'm good for a solid 75 most days. And like most club pros, I don't play that much anymore. I played, actually, that's not true. Last year at Brampton, because of the pandemic, we didn't have the range open until June. So May 17th to June 1st, I played basically every single day. I played 9 days in a row. And then basically fell apart because I couldn't walk after the 10th day. And then the range opened up, and then I don't think I played golf again until August.
CPJ Pro, right? The old can't play golf anymore.
Yeah, I love play golf. It's just I got a little bit busy, and it's like, as Mark Blackburn once said, I'm a greedy capitalist. So if I can make money teaching the golf lessons, I'm going to teach golf lessons instead of playing golf.
Did you do more playing lessons last year because of that?
With juniors, we did, because we can only have one or maybe two at a time.
Right.
So all the kids, we do individual stuff and around the golf course every week, every night. And it was fantastic.
So, I mean, you mentioned that as far as being, having your hand put up for you as far as taking over, working with the juniors. Did you find that there was an appeal for that for you right away? Or was it something that you grew fond of?
I mean, there was, like, when I started, it's a long time ago now, I was 19 years old, and the juniors at Mississauga, they're all 14, 15, 16, 17.
You make it sound like you're 90 years old, dude.
I'm 34.
That long ago. That was 15 years ago.
It's a long time ago. That's pre-pandemic. So
barely.
At the time, it's like,
got a point.
All the kids are roughly the same age as me, so it's kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. I get to hang out with these kids, and I get paid for it. And I get to go to play, like, at the time, all we had was the inner club. So I played the National. I remember I played Thornhill, shot even one under with making 9 birdies and no bogeys. I played everywhere as a inner club rep. So I'm like, this is so cool. And then as I went to Weston, got to do a little bit more junior golf. And then at Peak, like, well, you're the junior golf guy. It's yours to run. And you recruit from 10 kids to, I think, with 150 between camps and clinics. My last year there.
Wow. I mean, how has it progressed for you? What have you seen in that that wild 15-year career of yours so far?
Well, I've seen it all, I guess. And
I mean, relative to the juniors, I mean, how has it changed as far as coaching and teaching, the organization of that, resources available? What's your perspective on that? Because obviously, as somebody who's now highly regarded in the junior field, there must have been some transition over the years in what's able and what you're able to do with them.
Yeah, it's changed so much from, like, when I started, Future Links was just coming out and there wasn't a whole lot. Whereas look now, there's the U.S. Kids Resources, TPI, Future Links has expanded a little bit. There's all these different places you can find stuff. And when you get into the older competitive kids, like, it's insane what there is now with trainers. And I used to put kids through 3D analysis, and it's night and day. It used to be, you want to play tournament golf? Here's a CJGA. You can go play in that. Now it's CJGA leads to AJGA, which leads to U.S. Junior, leads to Canadian Junior. Like, it's so much more, like, it's so different. I guess it's like every sport. It's just evolved to become more competitive over the years.
I mean, you've got that, more schedules. Yeah, it's more complicated, I guess, that way. But, what are the juniors seeking now? I mean, obviously you'd have good juniors would come to you 15 years ago and they wanted a certain type of training. But how much more advanced is that now?
Good question. I specialize in younger, kind of less competitive kids, but
right.
One thing I've seen now is there's more kids at the older age that are not competitive getting into golf. Like, it wasn't just from last year, it's since I started at Brampton. kids who are 12, 13, 14 who might not be able to break an egg, but they want to play golf. And they're starting to play more and more golf. And that's one thing when I was at Mississauga, you didn't see if you didn't play, you didn't really play. Like if you couldn't play, if you weren't a good player, you didn't play. Whereas now it's, there's guys that are shooting in the hundreds that are getting into golf and getting in to try and play tournament golf because they think it's cool.
So how does that work at a club that you're at now where it is very a high-end private club, right? Where yeah. Is there a lot of casual play at that level? Or are you seeing that you're kind of going into more of the less casual player at that younger age?
I'll tell you decisively in 6 months when I'm back on at the end of the summer. But
fair enough. I mean,
from what I've heard, there's a lot of kids that are kind of casual that want to get into golf. Like we went into lockdown 3 weeks after I started here, and I hadn't really seen many juniors yet. But I've heard from other people that there is kids wanting to get into golf, and they're all kids of members who want to get into golf, but there really wasn't anything for them recently.
And you've got a great facility there. I mean, obviously, you know, as a host of multiple Canadian Opens, the golf course is under a renovation now. But, you know, the club has a lot of resources. They have a shorter course, as we mentioned last week, that, you know, is appealing as far as those emerging golfers. And you guys have quite a team put together now, including yourself and, you know, your former boss who became your boss again and another key coach who does a lot of work on the professional level.
Yeah, Ralph, I'm looking forward to working with Ralph. I mean, he calls me a couple of times a week because unfortunately during lockdown, he can't teach right now. And we've come up with some cool stuff for the kids this year. And then now we're working on what to do for the adults as well to make it enjoyable. And as you called it last week, the kids course, to get as many people out there as we can playing that golf course, even until the renovation's done, everyone will play the big course, but to get the kids and get the new golfers and get even the older golfers out on that short course and enjoying it.
So for you, how does the job change going to, you know, such a elite golf course, or does it? Like what attracted you into, I mean, outside of potentially the name, what attracted you to that golf course?
And I will be honest, the big part was working for Emerson again and going forward on the resume, not to knock where I've been before, but Hamilton holds that cachet when you go to apply for a job to say you worked at Hamilton. And because it will host a Canadian Open, and Emerson sold me on it saying there's lots of kids here that want to learn, they need someone to teach, you know, would you be interested? That was a quick yes.
Yeah, I mean, that relationship with Emerson Mahoney, I mean, he's been somebody who's been influential in your career. So, you know, that obviously was a big influence in that decision, right?
Yeah, that was, as he said, are you coming just for me? I said, no, I'm coming for the golf course, but worked for him for 3 years and won 3 awards in 3 years working for him.
That must say something. What do you think it was? What do you think the difference was? Was it a case of, you know, he allowed you to be who you were at the golf course, or what would you attribute it to?
I think it was a combination of that. And like, he was the first real boss I had that was a real mentor. Like my first year there, I applied for a job at another golf course as a head professional, and he ran me through. He's like, this is what you send to the interview as part of your package. It's an interview. Like, he step-by-step what you need to do until I blew the final interview. It didn't help me with that one, but he's the first like real mentor I had. That was my direct boss. That's like, you know, this is what you got to do. This is what you want to do. This is how you do it. And this might sound weird, but he's the first boss I ever had that has kids. So
that's interesting.
It's a little different because
what does that add to the perspective?
Well, it's like other bosses, like, well, you got to work here, you got to work there. And he's like, no, you know, take off, go see your kids, take Sunday off, go see your kids, go spend time with your family. Or other bosses, like, well, you're just working. Like, I work, why can't you work?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously an issue that's happened as far as work-life balance within the PGA and other aspects of golf. But, you know, so how important has that been for you?
Oh, I wish I met him. What, 5 years ago? I hope my girlfriend's not listening to this. 5 years ago, if I met him, I might still be married.
Okay.
Let's be honest.
But I mean, for you, I mean, it's a lot of value of that time that you can spend with your kids. I mean, I know personally, you know, and talking to you lots or whatever, how much your kids, you know, mean to you, as they do to everybody as far as their kids are concerned. But, you know, having that quality of life to be able to not only, you know, spend that precious time with your kids, but also at the same time, you know, get in good quality time at a profession that you love, that obviously makes it more appealing to stay in the industry, right?
Absolutely. And I was the one before I applied to Brampton, I almost got out of the business, but applied to Brampton last second, ended up working for him. And like, he's been great that I get to see the kids and of course, get to see my lovely girlfriend, Nadia, in case she's listening. She's been great. I didn't shout out to her when
she
I won.
She isn't listening anymore, Brad. She stopped about 35 seconds ago. And your phone, it should have some phone calls at some point.
Yeah. Though I can just push the fast forward 30 seconds for that last little bit.
Oh, yeah, glitch. Go ahead.
I didn't say thank you to her when I won Junior Leader of the Year. I thanked the kids and the parents and Em and the club. And she's like, you didn't thank me. I'm like, oh shit. Oh shoot. I didn't. She was sitting there with me watching the video.
How nervous were you for that? I mean, you had a post out just beforehand. You had a COVID mask in your pocket as a pocket square, which I thought was fun. But, you know, obviously the PGA, you know, probably gave you a hint that, you know, you were in the top three and that you should get ready to be on camera or whatever the case may be. But I mean, how nervous were you before that presentation?
I wasn't nervous because I knew I didn't have to go on camera. I didn't know I didn't say anything, but I mean, they told us a week before that you were a finalist, you were going to be final three.
Yeah.
And that was like, that was beyond the pipe dream I had of making it to the final three. I thought,
yeah,
I won Ontario, which was pretty cool to say. It was amazing to be able to pull that off. And then like you're a finalist for the national, like, well, wow. Didn't think I'd make it to the final three. And then,
yeah.
And unfortunately, Lego announced it so fast that I couldn't even like get into the finals room. I didn't know who won it first. I didn't hear my name.
And it was probably different than when you won the award before and you had, you know, some issues with the speech. Is that what I recall?
Oh, on the Class A of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on my Instagram if anyone wants to watch it. I had this bright idea. I was going to like, you know, just make it up on the spot on stage. I got about halfway through and I fell apart. And I don't think I finished the speech. Like, it was not pretty.
Well, it's nice that you have an opportunity. I mean, you keep winning awards, you'll have more opportunity to actually finish speeches, right?
Yeah, well, Junior Leader of the Year, you had to do one, and you didn't know if you won or not. So I had to record a speech, and for the national, I had to get you to help me, like, make something sound coherent. As far as, like,
the last podcast?
It was written, not spoken.
There you go.
I had no idea. Like, no one's ever going to see that except for Scott, because no one ever saw it. It's never won.
Yeah, but it was very heartfelt. I won't give details because those are personal to you. But you know, I was impressed with the words that you had in there, and you know what it did mean for you. So you know, big respect to you for that.
Thank you. I got one host that respects me at least.
Oh, I'm your biggest fan. You know that. Let's get to the important part. When's our standing team tea time this summer? That's why we're here, right?
Of course. I asked him. He said, "Of course, Scott can play anytime he wants."
Perfect. I love it. Good to hear. And Stefan's not even allowed to come caddy. Oh, that's too bad.
I know that course inside and out. Saw the whole thing
for two rounds.
Early leader at one point.
Very early.
He's first off the first day. It's still the same thing.
Leads the lead, baby. Leads the lead.
Fair enough. So, Brad, for you, I mean, you know, you look ahead to the year and you're talking about, you know, some cool stuff and things like that. What do you think's important right now to, you know, retain those juniors? Obviously, you're getting those juniors, as you mentioned, that are a little older, that want to get into the game more. So there is some interest. But what is it that you have to do as a professional, do you think, to capture their attention?
You got to show – I'm not going to try not to swear here. But you got to show that you care, like – I noticed that with the kids, especially at Brampton, like when you actually paid attention to them and gave them the time of day, they really enjoyed it. And they would come back and they enjoyed it there because like, oh, hey, Mini J, saw you finish third the last term. I'm like, good job. And, or, hey, how's your golf game? Like, you actually care about the kids outside of the hour you see them. And they seem to really enjoy that.
Do you think that's been a part of the issue for a lot of golf courses is that maybe, you know, the kids go there, but they're not given any special extra attention, and maybe that makes them feel not welcome?
I think so. I think it comes down like some members love kids, some members don't, but it's got to come down from the pros to, you know, really take a shining to the kid, to the junior programs, and say hi to the kids and give them that little bit of extra attention, especially for a new kid who might feel a little intimidated. Right, if you're 13 years old, you're shooting high 90s and you're joining a private golf club, yeah, it's intimidating. Everyone's breathing down your neck to play fast and to hurry up and do this. But if the pro's out there and say, you know, don't worry about it, buddy, go play, go have fun. Like, it's a different feel. I think it's a different feeling for the kid. They know, okay, the pro's got my back. He's not going to jump down my neck because I'm a little, I made a 7 on the first hole, and he'll kind of nudge me along, pick up the pace, and he's got my back. It goes a long way for kids everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you one thing. You know, we've interacted a fair bit on social media, and obviously it's been something that's been important to you as far as sharing who you are and getting to know other people and stuff. But I've always meant to ask you, you know, sometimes do you think it's a blessing or do you think it's a curse? Is there any, you know, what are your thoughts on that?
On social media, I think it's a, for me, it's a blessing. I don't have many haters except for Mr. Simback, who's a member at Mississauga, who will rip me apart in every single tweet I put out. And now Mr. Leather from Mississauga found me on Instagram and likes to rip me apart too. But otherwise, it's been a blessing. That's how I met pros from the States, yourself, Stefan. Well, that's kind of one of the curses, I guess.
Can't all be winners.
Love it.
But I, it's been a blessing because, like, you get to meet some different people and people get to know who you are. And I got to meet Dan Shea and Michelle Holmes a couple of years ago at the PGA show. And I got James Hong's coming on my chapter call next week for the PGA.
Yeah.
Like, you get to meet some really cool people and do some cool things. And it's, for me, it's been a blessing. Right, and it's a good way to waste time, let's be honest.
Not much else going on, right? I like that. So for you, before we wrap things up, like, what are you looking forward to this year? You know, change of place, new golf course. What are you hoping to accomplish? And what are you hoping to look, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to the golf course opening up once we get the one of the nines. I don't know which one's which. I'm still trying to figure that out. One of them will open up hopefully end of summer. The other one hopefully end of the year. So get to see the renovated golf course. But I'm looking forward to meeting all the kids, meeting all the members, hanging out, like getting to know everybody. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, that's awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We're glad we were able to give you more than 3 minutes and 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah, we haven't edited it yet. It could get cut pretty short.
We're going to cut the part about still being married, right?
Well, for the right price, yeah, the right number of tee times.
For the right amount, I like that, yeah.
But yeah, we certainly appreciate it, Brad. And, you know, keep up the great work. Enjoy your spirit. Enjoy seeing you also get rewarded for that effort as well, because, you know, you've done a great job, especially with the juniors. And I know they appreciate the work that you put into it. And I think all your peers appreciate what you do as well.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Brad, thank you for joining us. Brad Lawrence, lovely man. Looking forward to bugging him every time I'm with my in-laws. My number will be blocked. I think he jokes about they already got my face at the door not to let him in. I'll find ways. I'll be who's that baseball manager that got kicked out of the game and came back? He was sitting in the crowd.
Billy Martin.
Mustache on. And
yeah.
That'll be me by the time third time around that golf course. Sounds like they got some big plans, so that's exciting.
Yeah, for sure. He's a great guy, and come to call him a friend, and I enjoy his enthusiasm. And I think they've got a great team in place there, and they're going to do some special things at a special club.
All right, Scotty, why don't we hit the mailbag? Last week was a long one. I think we're both still a little drained. I think people are still getting to that. Should we run the contest again? Nobody, or like, should we give him another week? Here's the thing.
Yeah, we'll
leave
for
it at
sure.
This. Let's leave it at this. In the last episode, there was a contest. You had to get to a certain point. And if you got to that certain point, you were eligible for a book, 7 days in Augusta. So because nobody got back to us, here's the new rule. You got to go find that spot. You got to either message Flagstick Golf on Instagram or Flagstick on Twitter. Tell them the spot that we talked about that contest, And at this point, the first person to say that to Scott,
they're in,
gets the book 7 days in Augusta. So look forward to that tweet. If we don't have somebody at this point, either they don't want your used book. It is brand new, but I was joking.
It is brand new. Yeah.
They don't want this book, or like maybe
they're really
one
shy.
Is, yeah. Yeah. Everyone's clearly listening. They're just shy. Yeah. That's where I was going. But yeah, let's hit the mailbag, Scotty.
Yeah. You know, we got some great questions this week. We should say we're going to start to open up the mailbag as well to voice notes as well. To have people
up.
Yeah. If they want to ask questions that way, and then we can get some audio on the show. So that'll be a fun way to hear the voice of some of our listeners as well. But you know, they were great in getting in questions this week, and obviously some things that are very topical. So let's get right to it. How long until rangefinders are played on the PGA Tour, not just PGA America?
I'm going to give it a year based on this. I think they're going to see it has no effect. It's going to be quick and make things easier. Maybe it saves time. Like, even if it saves a second, a hole, or 5 seconds a hole, then it adds up. I say a year. I think at the end of the day, they'll be like, what are we doing here? But at the same time, if you asked me 10 years ago when a short's going to be allowed on tour, I would have said a year. Like, I don't, the PGA Tour sometimes just gets things so backwards. I hope so. They all have them. They're all given them every year. I talked about that story on the podcast where, you know, they gave Martin one and he lost it the first week and he had to go asking for another one. Like, they all have the same Bushnells that they're all sponsored, the tour sponsors or whatever. And yeah, so like, you may as well just have it. So
yeah, I think it's going to happen pretty quick as well. I mean, obviously that's going to have to go to the, you know, the Player Advisory Council and then get passed that way. But I suspect, you know, it'll be something gets pushed through at some point. And, you know, the PGA Tour has got data. They've done studies on some of their minor tours. You know, they never really published that information as far as the difference it would make. But I can see that, you know, if there's adoption for both the Women's PGA Championship and the PGA of America, the PGA Championship, and other events, I can see it it coming through probably in that same timeline. I'd say by 2022 that they'll be allowed on tour. All right, on to the next one here. What are your general thoughts on golf movies? Is it possible to make a good one?
I like them. I don't have a problem with them. I'm trying to think of the ones that...
I guess a good one is a relative term, right?
That's true.
I mean, we're not talking Oscar winners here.
Happy Gilmore is a good movie. If you don't like Happy Gilmore, you suck. If you don't like Caddyshack, you suck. What's that one, the Harry Vardon one, or I don't know.
Oh yeah, the Greatest Game Ever.
Yeah,
played.
The Greatest Game's okay.
Hey,
like,
good. Yeah,
yeah. It, what are you looking for? Like, there's good ones out there. You know, maybe they're like the Golf Channel's had a couple of good stuff out there that are more documentaries than they are movies. But maybe it just shows the lack of overall interest in golf at like that level in a movie. I don't know. If there was a way to make a good one, a great one that won Oscars, it would have been done by now. But I like them. What are your thoughts? I don't know.
I think there's just, like you said, I think there's just too high of expectations for movies. I mean, there's so many movies now that, you know, don't make it to the big screen because they're not blockbusters. And, you know, I think the issue is that, you know, in some of the writing for some of them, they just try to force it too much. They try to force golf into every single situation. And I think golf can be adjacent in a movie and it still be a golf movie and make it successful. But I think, you know, if they focus too hard on it, rather than, you know, I mean, Caddyshack is, yeah, it's about golf, but it's not about golf. And I think that's the case for, right. That's the case for a lot of the movies or whatever. And, you know, if you get too cheesy, too much cliche, then you all of a sudden put, you know, the real golf fans just go, ugh, you know, or whatever. And the other people basically don't understand it. So I think it's a fine line as far as the middle ground. It's probably possible to do it, but I just don't think there's going to be a lot of them. So
yeah, it's like saying, remember the Titans was just a football movie or
right.
Coach Carter was just a basketball movie. Blindside. Yeah, like if that's the case, you want a documentary. Actually, you want just to watch golf on Sunday. Just watch golf on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Record it and then pretend it's a movie. I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's just got to be a good story that happens to have golf involved. And I know there's more movies coming out. I know I got a, I got an email from a PR agency about a screener for something coming up, I think in April or something, but with Edward James Olmos and George Lopez in it. So I'll be interested to see what that is. We'll see. Who knows? It might be great, but we'll find out. So anyways, those are our thoughts on that. So on to the next one. Would TPC at Scottsdale make a better site for a PGA Tour two-player team event? I had this one actually came in. It was a little bit of a discussion on Twitter about it. What are your thoughts on it before I give mine?
No. Here's what it would be great for. The Ryder Cup.
Yeah. I saw the Matt Janelle tweet.
I saw a couple, and then I really got thinking. I heard
you'd have to change the layout, though. You'd have to change the configuration.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Not many matches get to 17.
Exactly.
So,
that's what I think people don't realize, is a lot of matches might not get to 16. So what you would need to do it right, and a Ryder Cup's massive, you got to do that. You recreate it so every other hole is almost a small stadium hole where you can, like, any par three, stadium hole. Yeah. Any drivable par four.
It's not just the stands as well, though. It's the actual hole design. Like 17 being, you know, anything can happen on 17.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 16 is a blah par three, really, when it comes down to it.
Awful par three.
Yeah, if it doesn't have the spectators, I mean, basically you can throw the ball there.
Oh, it's just a short layout, and then it's awful, yeah. Yeah. But I think it'd be great. The atmosphere, it's the people that go to it too. Yeah. That's what I think. To be able to do it at Ryder Cup, you have to be willing to let that atmosphere recreate itself again. I don't know if they could, right? It has happened, but, you know, screaming throughout the entirety of it, like, it would get old. It would be chaotic. I think it would see who's got the, it'd be fun for a year. I don't think with golf and its traditions and everything, I don't think they'd ever do it, but I think it'd be cool. Multiple stadium holes, you know, just pack the fans in there. I think it would be insane. Will it ever happen? I don't think the actual golf course is good enough for it.
Yeah, I think the issue is more the fact that the PGA of America owns the Ryder Cup along with the, you know, as far as in the European Tour versus the PGA of America. Versus the PGA Tour. So, I mean, the PGA of America here, you know, this is their cash cow. So they
rangefinders at the next Ryder Cup.
Yeah, and the other side of it too is that, you know, we already have a team event on the PGA Tour, the Zurich Classic, at a TPC, at TPC Louisiana.
Sucks.
Well, but the problem, yeah, but part of the problem is that you're in New Orleans, you have the opportunity for a great environment, but I think the setup is lacking a lot of times for that two-player event. I mean, I've played TPC Louisiana, and I can tell you that there's some very dramatic holes that are on there, but they never give them the opportunity to do that. I mean, there's at least a couple of par fours that, you know, could be drivable and bring, you know, water into play and make for a wild situation, but we just don't see that there. We don't see the big grandstands. We don't see the... and. They're in New Orleans. So, yeah. I mean, you know, so they've already got part of it there. They just need to go a little bit extra. So I don't think, I agree with you. TPC Scottsdale could be inviting in certain ways, but here for like a Ryder Cup, but here for that two-player event, you know, they're already in Louisiana. So, you know, just make use of it there properly.
And two-player events too, unless it is tied to a tie outside of the people, it doesn't work. A lot of these times, two guys are just like, hey, like, do you have a partner? No. Like,
yeah, sure. Exactly.
Hey, I'm Stefan. Yeah. No, I'm Scott. Like, let's go. Let's go. What do you want our walk-up song to be? I don't know. I have the tiger. Yeah, sure. Like, there's like, and then there's guys that really lean into it.
Yeah, you're not
like,
playing for your country.
Yeah, there's nothing exciting about it.
Yeah. All right, on to the next one here. What is the go-to youthful brand in golf right now?
Man,
there's a wide question.
Like, it depends on what you want. I've been the brand that stuck out to me lately. I don't know if it's youthful. I don't know what you mean by youthful. Like,
I don't know either.
Like,
it's not my
the youths, or like, are you talking about youths? Like just the youths?
I think it's probably
or just
about
like fun
appealing.
Style.
Yeah, I think that's being appealing to the younger crowd. And I don't know here if this is clothing, if this is equipment. I'm not sure.
True. The brand, I'm going to give you a brand out of Australia that popped up to me recently, and I love what they're doing. I don't know how much their golf stuff it looks like on tour, like actual on course stuff, but just everything they're doing. Birds of Condor. They're based out of Australia. Nice high end, casual clothing built around the golf industry, but then they also have their actual stuff that you can wear on course. I think it's really cool stuff. Check them out. They got a good social that, you know, but if you're looking for names of brands that you might know, Travis Matthews, I'm liking what they're doing lately. Penguin's always been a brand. I haven't really heard much from them in the last little while. I don't know where they're going. But for me, I just like something different. So there's so many though. And I think that's what people get caught in to what guys are wearing or gals are wearing on tour. There's a ton of different brands out there. Go support some small businesses. You can find them all over. Get a look on Instagram. You'd be able to find tons of different brands out there that might suit your style. I don't know what you, again, we don't know what you mean by youthful. Look around. Every brand out there is going to be doing something. I don't know who Justin Thomas is wearing right now. Looks like he's going the opposite of youthful. Looks like he just went shopping at Walmart. Just very basic, no logo stuff right now, which is a topic we don't really need to go down.
Could have been at TJ Maxx or something.
Yeah, TJ Maxx. Winners. Yeah, he was down at Winners picking up
Ross Dress Barn.
The Bay. The Bay's probably got some good deals right now.
Could be.
Yeah, maybe found like an old Sears that was still open in Phoenix area, and that's where he picked up his outfits. But what are your thoughts? Any brands pop up for you?
Well, it's funny because you said Sears or whatever. Sears used to sell the Arnold Palmer clothing or whatever. And I saw today that Puma is doing a crossover collection with Arnold Palmer and had some really cool looks to it or whatever. And I mentioned, hey, it's certainly not the old polyester nightmares that used to be at Sears or whatever. But
sleeves down to your mid forearm.
Exactly. Very sharp creases in the polyester pants. Yeah. You know what? You're right. There's a lot of brands here. I mean, it's hard to target if we start talking about, you know, hard goods, but certainly I think the youthful stuff really carries over mostly in the clothing and accessories, and you're right, a lot of the emerging brands are going to be found basically on direct, doing direct sales, doing a lot of promotion on social media, trying to build their business from the ground up. And I think there are a lot of them out there. You know, there's probably a list of 100 right now. Will they all succeed? No. But, you know, they're going to give it a whirl. And if they're original enough, they're strong enough as far as their marketing, they put out good material, they have good customer service, they're going to thrive and they're going to survive.
Yeah, I like when brands are trying to do things differently. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Like Nike did those shoes recently. They had the flap over the...
Yeah, the little kilty.
Yeah. Like, would I wear them? No, but that's cool and different. And I think some people love those styles. For example, I know Adidas is doing great work, but like, I feel like I've seen the Tour 360 for 5 years, right? Like, how can we make that more flashy and different? Hmm. Or maybe is it just such a staple? Let's just keep it in there. And then they're trying the different things with like the Adi Cross and that new one they're coming out.
Well, the Code Chaos was great. The ZG21, which is their other one now. And I think they've done that, but they also have the retro, you know, models and things as well. It's always harder, I think, for those big brands to be perceived in
more
a different
risk. For them, but
there is. So they almost have to have sub brands within things that they have. I mean, obviously,
Ashworth is coming back. Saw that.
Yeah,
What's up with that, Scotty?
That one's interesting. So they were bought by
Adams Golf, maybe. Maybe they decided to do two in one here. No,
no. It was a YGM Group, which is a distributor out of Korea that does a number of different brands over there. They bought it off of TaylorMade in 2019, and they popped back up on Ashworth a few days ago for the first time in over 4 years. And they had another tweet today pushing out some different things as far as their, you know, it was just a shirt. That's all it was, but it didn't look all that exciting or that innovative. In fact, I mean, I literally saw some stuff from FootJoy, the other day that, you know, looked more innovative with some drinks and stuff on it or whatever. It's a great time to be a consumer for golf stuff. I mean, you know, you can get a lot of things to suit your personality, which didn't exist 10 years ago. It was the uniform. It was the same thing. So you can get your own look for sure. I think it's just a difficult question. And I think that's something we can explore. I'd love to maybe hook up with, 10 great young brands and, you know, maybe do a little showcase and get some of these people on here and talk to them a little. We've had some people in the equipment realm. Obviously, Haywood was on here. I think there's a lot of things in different aspects, whether it's Jeff Tate at Triple Bogey, which went from a, you know, niche brand of beer to something that's almost become a staple at some of the golf courses. I think that would be interesting to, you know, to talk to some of these entrepreneurs and get them on and hear their story a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's also hit the last mailbag question and wrap up this week.
All right, last one here. Pros and cons of hitting off of turf versus mats.
So it depends on what mat. I think you would know way more and could put everyone to sleep. This mat based on this.
You don't
resistance.
Have an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, but like there's some videos out there where you get a really bad mat and like you can see that the club is hitting the ground, the ball's popping up, and then you're almost catching it on the fly. Along those lines, which has effect on spin and all sorts
of things. The old lie board situation.
Yeah, the lie board. Lie board is the, if you ever go for a fitting and they pull out the lie board, ask for a refund. Yeah. For me, I'm going to go with a very simple thing that, like, I don't need to get into big details. You got to get really high quality ones or you can actually injure yourself. I gave myself tennis elbow on both elbows one winter and I still deal with it from this day from hitting too much off mats that just didn't have enough, give to them that it just had effect. So yeah, I think I noticed that a lot. I was struggling for a long time with, I was like, why do I get no spin? I get no spin. And it's like these mats, you're picking off such a clean lie that their spin just was coming off so little that when I went and got tested outside, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It is a lower spinning flight. But still there's a lot of different things. So yeah, you do need to, be careful, but I'm sure Scotty can give you more details.
Yeah, I don't want to weigh in. Yeah, I could go in, you know, just like you said, I could weigh in on this and we could talk for a long time about it, but it certainly won't. If the person that asked this question wants more details, they can certainly DM me and we can talk about it more. But you're right. Resistance is a big thing as far as, you know, what's going to happen as far as the turf interaction, how that club is going to work into the ground. Obviously, when you're outside, it can go down into the turf and through the turf much easier. A mat is not designed to be destroyed every time that you hit a golf ball off it. So it's going to have some amount of resistance. Spin difference, as you mentioned, obviously, you know, the having the mat there changes what's going to happen as far as a flyer situation or a non-flyer situation. It changes your strike point, where you're going to hit it on the club face as far as lower on the face or higher on the face, depending on the depth of the mat. So that's going to have an effect as far as spin is concerned. And also, as you mentioned, related to the lie board, in certain situations with certain mats, you know, you can end up being, you know, striking the ground inches, many inches behind the golf ball and still get away with hitting the golf ball, whereas you might not be able to do that on turf. So that ability to bounce and slide and how it's affect your contact with the golf ball is important as well. So pros and cons, yeah, you know what, you're forced into the situation, but if you can get into a situation outside, you know, obviously in springtime courses will have, you know, mats out just to protect the turf and stuff like that. Ideally, you golf on grass, get on grass as much as you can.
I like it. Well, that's it for the mailbag. Next week, we're going to try something different. We'll see if we get any, but we're going to throw out we're going to have to get it early. I think we might have to post this on Thursday, basically.
Either that or we're going to have to do voice impersonations.
I almost did the whole podcast that way today. We'll do voice memos. You can send them on Instagram. Scott can record. I think you know how to record your screen on your phone. You've learned skill set. Okay, well, you never know.
Grandpa can figure that out.
You never know, you old boomer. I think it'll be cool. I think it'll be cool. I want to go down scenarios like,
yeah,
you know, you have to play Pebble Beach, or you know, you play it, but your wife makes you sleep on the couch for a month. Is it like, I don't know, that was my scenario. Like, throw stuff at us. Let's hear something
different.
Don't
get too personal here.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. I'm open for it all. So yeah, let's get some voice memos. Maybe we'll do the whole thing voice memo. Again, if you are at this point, we still have that contest open for 7 days in Augusta. Go find the last episode where we talked about it and send it to Scotty on Flagstick on either Instagram or Twitter or text him. I don't know. Up to you. What we need now is the tip of the week, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah, last one here. Tip of the week. Just basically want a lot of people when they're focusing on their game to focus on the early part of their backswing. Basically, the early part of the backswing sets up a lot of things that happen as far as pressure movement of the lower body, how your hand path is, and then the results of what ends up happening in impact with your club path and your face angle that you end up with at impact. So I see a lot of people that are like focused on the top of their backswing, and they don't really focus on how they got there in the first place. Don't just manipulate the club to get it to a certain position. That's not all of a sudden going to create magic at impact. You have to really be concerned with what happens in the early part of the backswing. That ends up creating what we see at the top of the backswing a lot of times. So don't worry so much about the backswing and the top where you're at. To really take care of the things that happen early in your backswing. And when I say early in the backswing, I mean in the first few inches as you work your way back. There's a lot of stuff that happens there that really sets up the whole sequence of the golf swing. So have a look at that. Have a deeper look at that. Definitely engage your coach to look at that, and I think you'll have some positive results.
Awesome. That's it, folks, for this week. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Brad Lawrence. Can't wait to bug you all summer about playing Hamilton. Maybe next week, maybe next time we'll give him 10 minutes on the podcast. We gave him some good time on this podcast. Scotty, any final thoughts for the week?
No, all good. Looking forward to seeing Pebble Beach again, despite the fact that, you know, whatever the field is, but always great to see that and see the seals and dogs running around on the beach and hear the dulcet tones of gym nets. And it's a good sign that the golf season is around the corner for us.
Any simulator updates going on?
Well, I think I might have sent an obscene amount of money to Denmark this week. Uh-oh. So we've got something coming that way. But yeah, things are progressing.
Money laundering.
Things are progressing well. A lot of construction is done. And I don't know, we're probably 2 or 3 weeks away before we can whack a ball in there.
I'll do one. Hey, we opened up in Ontario. We're allowed to see each other now. So maybe we'll do a podcast in the garage.
There you
bring
go.
Bring the gear over and chat it out there and hit some balls and play around and look forward to it. Look forward to seeing what, you know, it's literally been the longest time in forever since I actually haven't swung a golf club. You know, even last year during the pandemic, they didn't really come until March. We were still hitting indoors and stuff. And maybe it was like a month. Like the last time I swung a golf club was November. I don't know.
Yeah.
October. Weird. It's odd. So, yeah, the garage we're going to really test how sturdy those walls are.
Sounds good.
In there. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week. We will chat with you then. Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.